session two, we're going to look at carbon management. And for this panel discussion, I'm welcoming Tristan Smith from University College London and the Energy Institute and MASS, M-A-S. Claire Wright. Claire's the General Manager, Commercial and Shipping at Shell Shipping and Maritime. David Watts, Vice President, Business Development and Partnerships at the Signal Group. Angelica Camini, Head of Data Analytics, Optima Shipping Services, and the Managing Director of KO2 Capital. And Mike Powell, Chief Business Officer at Stratum 5. There's a lot of good things happening in the industry around carbon, as we know. And the maritime industry is using fossil fuels and will be for some time yet. So it means that carbon management is here and it will be here for a while yet. We've asked the panel to start with, just to give a little insight from them as an opener in their own areas of expertise. And Tristan, would you like to kick us off with the kind of regulatory outlook of where we are?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thank you very much, Will. So as an academic, I can sit in an ivory tower and give you the theory, and then we'll talk about whether this is at all practical. But the theory needs to start with the climate science, which we take from the IPCC. And the climate science is pretty depressing, as you probably all know. We need to halve our emissions by 2030, and we haven't really started to even reduce them. And so we know that we're on this kind of disconnect between what we need to do to avoid exceeding a 1.5 temperature increase above pre-industrial levels. And we know that we're not on that pathway. But if we use the IPCC science, we can quantify exactly what shipping needs to do. And that is something that has been done in something called the Science-Based Targets Initiative, which we've been involved in. And we estimate from there that a 1.5 line pathway for shipping is a 37% reduction in absolute greenhouse gas emissions on a 2008 baseline, and a 96% greenhouse gas reduction in 2040, still on the same 2008 baseline. So if you calibrated to the current IMO 40% carbon intensity reduction and the 50% absolute reduction in 2050, that kind of means we don't have to do anything this decade and maybe we start doing things in the 30s. That isn't anything like what we need for IPCC science. So where is the IMO up to? Well, in July this year, we will have a revised IMO greenhouse gas study, and that will change the framing. And the conversations, the kind of pre-debates that we've had, indicate there's nothing certain until we hear the outcome of MEPC 80. They indicate that we're heading to IMO strengthening its ambition significantly to go to zero by 2050. Exactly how that zero is defined, likely to be well-to-weight basis, likely to exclude offsets, so it's all about in-sector absolute reduction. And exactly what we agree on 2050 and 2040 and 2030 is unclear at this point. But you have countries like the United States, the United Kingdom, and the climate vulnerable countries pitching for exactly those science-based target initiative numbers that I just mentioned, the 37% reduction by 2030. So a radical shift in the next 6 years in the very short term. The problem that we have, though, is that the IMO will reach a compromise. So even though we have a number of countries saying something which is aligned with the IPCC science, we also have a lot of countries that don't agree with that, and so we won't end up with that high ambition 1.5 land outcome. And that is really bad news for everyone in this room, or maybe it's an opportunity. And that sort of depends on how you are positioned, because that disconnect means that we'll have a very messy transition. You won't be able to look at the IMO and pretend that that conversation about the target has gone away, because that conversation will continue, and it will get worse and more unpleasant over this decade. It means that you'll be operating not just within IMO regulatory drivers, but within unilateral actions taken by member states. Obviously, the EU is the one that's most noted at this point, but you can see more of the member states and regions coming out of their shells and starting to whack their own opinion of what is needed to avoid exceeding 1.5. You're going to see Scope 3 emissions becoming regulated and interfering in the shipping industry in a way that has never happened before. And I think we're going to see litigation and the threat of litigation and the way that litigation carries through into action increase significantly. And by litigation, I'd like to clarify what I mean by that. So when we exceed 1.5, which is now looking quite likely, you enable some relatively unlimited liability from the countries that suffer and the populations of those countries that suffer. There are about 50 countries globally who are known as the climate vulnerables, who have existential threats as we exceed that temperature threshold, and whose populations have already started to open law cases to sue countries and companies for their failure to avoid the exceedance of 1.5. And that litigation threat is being felt by pension funds. It's being felt by the shareholders of corporates that finance ships. It's being felt in lots of different ways. It's not necessarily exactly acted on now, but that will increase. So this is not necessarily a transition that's driven by the IMO. It looks increasingly unlikely that will be driven by the IMO, because the IMO will not be at least in 23 on a 1.5 aligned pathway. So the question is, how do you get exposed to those risks and opportunities if you factor in a wider sphere of influence?
Thank you, Tristan. Claire, as from a practitioner's point of view, as a chair on a charter and also a signatory to the Sea Cargo Charter, we want to add that as well. What's your view on sort of and how are you managing at this point in time?
I think what Tristan has just described explains the complexity of what charterers and ship owners are facing as we go through this transition. Just your very beginning opening statement with the different percentage reduction targets from different regulatory bodies or from the climate science, I think shows the challenge that we have, and if I refer to the headline of this conference, the digital challenge we have in actually measuring some of this, particularly for those parties in the value chain who aren't the direct contractual signatory with another party in the chain. That is a big challenge from getting the whole value chain involved in reducing emissions. But if I go back to the kind of the very beginning, our view as Shell, and obviously we wear many hats with Shell, here primarily I'm here as a charterer and a Sea Cargo Charter signatory, but we are obviously also a fuel provider. We would like the IMO to adopt a net zero target. We would like them to define what that means, because one of the risks we see is in the ambiguity of not defining the target. And then obviously what we would like is a clear trajectory to that target, and I think that's a role the Sea Cargo Charter can play. And if we have a clear target, which we do, the Sea Cargo Charter is a mechanism for charterers, particularly bulk charterers, to measure and align their emissions against currently an IMO 2050 trajectory. But it means that each year we publish the alignment, and the next report is in June, publish the alignment of our emissions per vessel segment against that trajectory to 2050. Because it's all very well having a 2050 target, whether that's the current 50% or 100%, but if you don't have intermediate targets to get there, then it doesn't incentivise the investment. And from a fuel supplier, obviously we need that regulatory environment and the policy environment to incentivise the demand that then creates the pull for the production and the supply. From a charterer point of view, the main area where we are